Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about how to write newsletters that people actually read. As many of you know, writing newsletters and writing client alerts is one of the most difficult tasks that legal marketers face. And especially getting people to actually read your newsletter is a very difficult task. So with us today is Margot Aaron. I saw Margot present at the recent Inbound Conference, which is HubSpot annual conference, and I was blown away by her presentation. So I asked her to be on the podcast and she joined, which I'm really, really excited about. So let me introduce Margot. Margot began her career as a psychological researcher before she accidentally landed herself in marketing. And today, Margot trains organizations on how to connect authentically with their customers and to use ethical marketing to sell better and sell more online. Thousands of students have taken her course on marketing, psychology, and honest selling. And Margot's been featured in Inc., Business Insider, Thought Catalog, Huffington Post, HubSpot, CopyHactors, and Growth Lab. She is a very sought-after speaker, a co-host of a popular internet talk show, and writes one of the most popular emails and newsletters that you probably never heard of. Her website is thatseemsimportant.com. And without further ado, welcome to the show, Margot.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to have you on this show. And as we chatted a little bit, you know, most of our audience are marketers at law firms. And as you can probably imagine, they have a lot of problems writing emails and email newsletters that actually people will read. But before we dive into the topic, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and how you accidentally landed in marketing?
Well, I really relate to the legal profession's problem because when I was working in psychology, we also had this same problem of how do you reach people and get them to care? So when I was working in a psychological research lab, part of my job was to get patients enrolled in our studies. And it never occurred to me that psychology was involved in that. I was just doing what I was told, which is putting up flyers or taking out an ad on the radio. And it never occurred to me to really think about the quality of the content we put out or how any of that was connecting with the person on the other side. And that's how I accidentally ended up in marketing. It turns out there's a tremendous amount of behavioral psychology that goes into understanding how do you connect with the person on the other side of the marketing message and get them to either take an action or whether that's open an email, click something, join your study, buy something. And I became fascinated by this because there's legal departments know this, but it's especially true in psychology, that there's a lot of information we have that can help you. But on the surface, it's pretty boring. And it's difficult to get people to pay attention or care. And so I became sort of obsessed with this question of like, how do you get someone to care? And that's how I ended up in marketing.
I love it. That's such an interesting story. And when you told it at Inbound, I was like, okay, I really want to hear what she has to say. So from your perspective, and obviously you work with a lot of different companies and consult with them, but you know, from your perspective, what works and what doesn't work when it comes to email?
Sure. Well, I think before we talk about what works and doesn't, you have to understand email as a channel. So unlike an ad or your website or social media or a white paper or television, email is deeply personal. It's going straight into your inbox, sitting next to updates from your mom, maybe your husband, maybe daycare, maybe the guy you're dating. I don't know your life, but it's personal. It's where we interact with the people who matter to us. And brands have started to infiltrate that inbox over the last several years, if not decade. And they started doing what all brands tend to do, which is scream at you. And it's really, really great if you are a company who is differentiating itself on discounts. So I know when I see something from J.Crew in my email inbox, it's probably 40% off something. And I can make a choice whether or not I'm going to open that or not. But it's pretty much a one-way communication. And so I am differentiating that in my brain from the email that might have my husband's name on it. And part of what we have to understand as marketers is we don't ever want to be ignored. And if we don't want to be ignored, we have to turn email into what it was intended to be in the first place, which is a two-way street, a conversation between us. It's a connection and vehicle between us and our prospective or existing clients. And that's the first mindset shift that has to happen for email to ever work. I think the mistake a lot of us make, and I've done this as well, is thinking that email is a convenient distribution channel for our content.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because typically you think about, you know, two-way conversations mode when it comes to social media, but thinking about email that way is sort of unique. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. Continue,
please. No. Please interrupt. Yeah. I'm a chronic interrupter as well. So a lot of people think this means, you know, an unreasonable amount of work. Like, Margo, I can't respond to all my emails. And that's not what I am suggesting, though if you can respond to some, that's awesome. I'm suggesting that you go into it assuming a human being on the other end with hopes, dreams, fears, all of the spectrum of emotions that we have is on there. And that person is busy. That person is tired. That person is pressed for time. And so one of the failures of marketing lately, I think, is telling people that they have a short attention span. And I think when it comes to email, that's especially not true. What's true is that the emails that we are sending out as marketers are extremely boring. And we have taught our readers that our information is not worth their time. It's not valuable to them. It's not going to make a difference in their day. And so back to your original question on how can you make this work, it's by answering one question. And that question is, why should I care? Putting yourself in the shoes of the person on the other end, going, okay, they're sitting in the middle of, I don't know what kind of law you are. So let's say it's employment law. And this person is in the middle of a hiring decision that is going to be a little uncomfortable. And they get an email from you. What should it say? Like, how do we meet them where they are? How is it going to connect with all of the different facets of their day and not make them feel like, is speaking down to them going to make them trust you? Is perhaps speaking in language that they don't understand make them feel taken care of? Sometimes the answer is yes, by the way. Sometimes you can use some of the jargon that people don't understand to go, this law firm actually understands a lot more than I do. Or you can go in the other direction and speak a little bit more what I call the plain English principle. Speak more like a human being, and then people trust you more. So there's a lot of different directions you can go with tactics, but the main thing to think about is, what is the person on the other end struggling with? Because what I see a lot of companies do, especially in spaces like finance, law, and medicine, and also nonprofits, strangely enough, is they end up writing what their manager told them to write. They're like, we have an event coming up, or you need to tell people that we just published this white paper, or you absolutely need to let everyone know we just won this award. And they never pause to ask this question, why would anyone care? Like, why do I care that you published this white paper? Maybe a better way to approach it is, what about this white paper is useful for me as I go through my day? How are you positioning yourself as a thought leader in my space that's making me better at my job?
That's exactly what we try to help our clients with. Which is, you know, as you said, it's really putting it about, how is this communication going to be beneficial to the person that it's intended to, right? A lot of times we try to think internally, and we try to think about what it is and who's speaking, you know, let's say it's a webinar, who it's about and who's speaking, instead of like, okay, why should I listen to this webinar? What are the benefits? What am I going to get out of it if I spend my time registering for this or downloading this or signing up for something like that, right?
Yes. Well, let's use ourselves as an example right now. Like, to everyone listening, right now, I really do want to use a lot of marketing jargon, and I want to explain things to you so you think I'm smart. But I have to withhold that, and I have to resist the urge, because instead I'm thinking, okay, if you're on the other end of this, you are busy, you have chosen to listen to Guy today, he brought me on. That's a lot of trust that you have to have in Guy and also in me. And so I need to find a way to take what's in my head and make it relevant to your day and your job, because I know part of what you're trying to do is perform well in your job and in your work and make your boss happy and also get the clients pleased. And so I have to think about all of the things that are in my head. How do they apply to your life? That's what's top of mind.
I love it. So you mentioned something interesting during your presentation at Inbound, which is two things that I really liked. One is, think about it as if you're explaining something to your mother, which I want you to talk more about what that really means. But the other thing, which I found fascinating, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about this as well, is actually three things. So like, if you're talking to your mother, make it an inside joke, an insider, and then I forgot what the third one is, but why don't we talk about those two first?
Sure. So let's start with the inside joke. Oftentimes when we're writing, what we do with our content is we try and make it so everyone, it doesn't leave anyone out. And that type of content ends up being way too broad and doesn't effectively engage or convert your readers. Mm-hmm. What it should do is feel like an inside joke with your audience. If you are in a legal field, and let's say you're in a specific silo, whether it's corporate law or entertainment law or employee law, like the different facets you're in, there are all sorts of things that people are complaining about that they say behind closed doors. And there are in-group language that you use with each other. There are things that you could say to each other that no one else is going to understand. That if you're in your specific silo and you came home and you told your husband about it, he'd be like, I don't understand what you just said. That all sounded like gibberish. That's the kind of stuff that should be going into your newsletter, because the people who do get the joke are your readers. They're the ones who understand why it's funny. They're the ones who understand why it's a big deal. And that's what I want you to think about, like that your husband should never actually understand what your newsletter is. Only your clients and your prospective clients who are on the list should get the joke. So it's a way of focusing your content.
And then The other thing you mentioned is when you sit down to write an email, typically what you do is you visualize in your mind one or two people that you're actually writing it to. And how they will react. And then, you know, that's really your only focus. And that alone is enough, because there's other people that are very similarly situated to those two people that you are writing to. So talk a little bit about that.
This is one of those things that bent my brain when I learned it, which is there is a remarkably diverse, that's the wrong word, let me think. When you employ specificity in your marketing, it is strangely applicable to way more people. There's an amplification effect. Mm-hmm. That was the word I was looking for. So we often think that, I know I do this, I don't want to leave anyone out. So when I sit down and I'm writing something about marketing, I'm like, okay, well, some people have an online business. Some people are B2B. Some people are marketing managers inside of a corporation. Some people are a small business owner. Oh my God, all of them are sort of struggling with the same problem, but how do we talk about this problem? And then I pause and I remember that even if I focus only on online business owners or only on freelancers, everyone else is going to get the joke, because the more specific I am with my language, the more vivid the pain point and the problem becomes in your imagination. And that's the part I want people to connect to. So this is the power of story in our brains. And this comes from a lesson. If anyone wants to geek out, you can check out Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History. I believe it's in season 3, but you can look at whichever episode is on country music. And he goes on to explain how there are certain country songs that will make you cry. They are so relatable, even though you have nothing in common with the person that they're talking about. And that's because when you use specific language, we as humans, our brain is wired to sort of understand story more than facts. And so if you tell a story, we start to connect with the underlying emotions of that story. And we can relate, and then we're more likely to act, because emotions are what drive behavior, especially purchase behavior. And so when I think of that one person, going back to your original question, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to paint a picture of someone at their desk wearing sweatpants, you know, feeling nervous that they don't know what the right thing to do is, and they've taken so many courses and they've read all the books, and then they're sitting there and then there's that blank page, and they're looking at Evernote and they're like, I am going to do this wrong. The subject line is not going to work. Mm. Right? So that's a really, really specific picture, but I bet everyone listening right now can relate to that moment.
Absolutely.
So there it is. That's the power.
I love it. So let me ask you another question. So a lot of our audience, you know, for their firms, a lot of these firms send out probably monthly, bi-monthly client alerts. And client alerts really are, you know, email newsletters, if you will, but that are targeted to existing clients. And one of the complaints that we hear a lot from existing clients is, I want to work with a law firm that provides added value to me. And what I mean by added value is value beyond the transaction, right? Mm-hmm. I hired you to handle my case. Great, you're doing a great job at it, but what else are you going to do for me? So if you were to sit in the shoes of that legal marketer that has to send out this client alert, you know, once a month, again, it's not coming from the marketer, it's coming from the firm. You know, what, do you have any specific recommendations to make that alert more meaningful to the client at the end of the day?
Yes, I think you have the best job of anyone, because you get to sit down and you don't have to please the boss, you get to please the client. And this is where you get to play a little bit more. So each of you are going to have a different answer for this, but depending on the specifics of your niche and your silo and the category of law that you're in, I would talk to the clients and see where their head's at. But also, this sounds really cheesy, but here it is, deploy empathy. Like, pause and think. If I am the client and I just paid you, I don't know, $10,000 in retainer fees for the week, for the month, and what am I struggling with? What are things I want to know more about? What are updates in the legal world that I should know about? And also remember that people are probably scanning this, and the role of something like this is not to necessarily be really, really substantive in how you educate people, but simply positioning yourself as someone who is looking out in your best interest, like a fiduciary, and minimizing time for them. So it's like, you don't have to worry about all this stuff because we got you. I remember I was working with a copyright lawyer, and it was such a relief to know that he was up to date on copyright law. I didn't care about it. I didn't want to read about it. I didn't want to learn about it. Part of his value to me and what was worth paying a premium was that I didn't have to think about those things. I didn't have to stay up to date, but I loved the fact that he kept me posted on all the things that he was staying up to date on. Like, that felt so helpful in engendering trust and making me feel taken care of. And I think that's the role of a client update. It's like, you want to continue to make them feel taken care of. So I would think of it also in the same way you would handle a sales conversation. Like, what kinds of things are adding value beyond the transaction? You're just doing it digitally now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. So one question we frequently get from clients and other legal marketers is, how long should my newsletter be? And I know you have a particular thought in terms of that. How would you answer that?
This is where I default to Stephen King, as long or short as necessary to tell the story. Right. So it depends on your specific demographic and also the agreement you've set up with them. So what I mean by that is, when someone signs up for your emails, what do they expect? What do they want in their inbox? So it could be, some firms do what like my accountant does, which is they send a HTML text only email about what's going on in accounting. And it's like narrative form. It almost feels like, you know, the updates that Warren Buffett sends that are like super, super long, as he's telling you what he learned for the year to everyone who's a Berkshire Hathaway owner or stockholder. So like something like that can be really, really long. But if you're doing more of a, you know, Tim Ferriss has a nice template for he calls it Five Bullet Friday, where you're giving that, maybe you've templatized it a little bit. And in one section, it's a client spotlight. In another section, it's a legal, you know, law update. Another section, it's, a loophole in something. You have different categories. Those can be short and skimmable. So it really has to do with the contract you've made with your reader, and what they're looking for that can benefit them, and where that intersects with your brand and your capabilities. If you are a really, really beautiful long-form writer, I would not shy away from that. But I wouldn't expect someone who is really busy and doesn't value your stories to read them. If you have clients that are hungry for more information, and part of what they're struggling with is low competency in the area you're competent in, it might be that long form is the better way to go. So you have to understand the psychographic of your market before you make a conclusive decision on this.
Great, great advice. All right, I'll ask you the same question with regards to frequency, because that's something we get a lot. Like, well, I don't want to email them too much, or, you know, what's too much, what's too little. And I know you have a take on that as
yes.
well.
Yes, it's never annoying if you're the market. That's the rule. So the people who are paying you the most and coming back again and again, and that are excited about what you have, they are never going to find what you write annoying. That said, you want to maintain, you know, respect. And I think when we're talking about a newsletter, which even though it should be a two-way communication, the bulk of these are going to be one way. So it's more of a broadcast email. It shouldn't be, but I know half of you are not going to listen to me right now. So if that is the case, you want to keep it where it's consistent, but not every single day.
Yes.
So you can never go wrong with a weekly or monthly. I would say just commit. Whatever it is, commit and don't miss it. So if you're doing a monthly, then just make sure people know that it's a monthly thing and keep going. The goal of your newsletter matters here. So part of your newsletter's goal is to add value for existing customers. Monthly is just fine. If part of your goal is to upsell, I would probably increase in frequency, because you want to stay top of mind and you want to be there for the moment that they are having the pain point that you solve. If this is for prospective customers that have never bought from you before, I would say increase frequency for sure. And that's because you want to be in front of your market at the moment that they're having the problem that you solve.
I love it. And yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. And it is about consistency, right? What it's not about how, you know, whatever you decide, you should kind of try to stick to that. You know, another thing that occurs to me, so when we first as an agency started sending out our emails, you know, initially we started with a, you know, nice sized list. And then as we started to send, we would get, you know, unsubscribes, and I would freak out. I'm like, oh my God, we're losing subscribers.
Yeah.
But then I read something, I don't know, remember what I read, and I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, what you want is people that are going to find value
yes.
in what you're sending to them. And if they don't find value, that's okay. They don't
yes.
need to subscribe, as long as you're providing value to your audience, right? I mean, do you agree?
Oh my God, yes. The fear of unsubscribes keeps people from sending better content and sending it more frequently. And it's such a shame, because those people don't deserve your attention. You know, you want to write to the people who are reading you every single week and that are paying attention. Those people deserve your time. And that's why I think that having blinders on to talk only to people where it's an inside joke to your audience is actually very kind and generous. Because if people unsubscribing are taking up the bulk of your energy, how unfair to the rest of us. But I get it. Yeah. I have done the same thing where I look and I'm like, oh no, I lost so many people on that one. But usually, and here's the irony of it all, the more you nail your target market, the more bifurcating it becomes. So when I have high unsubscribes on something, it's usually the same kind of email that I have a high buy or sales rate. Mm-hmm. Because that's when it's like game time. It's like, you're one of us or you're not one of us. You're buying or you're not buying. You believe this stuff, you don't believe this stuff. And that's actually a good thing.
I love it. All right, we have run out of time, although I could talk to you for at least another hour. So before I let you go, what would be one piece of advice or an actionable takeaway that you would give to our audience?
I would tell you to ask yourself before you ever send anything out, why would this person care? And if that becomes your guiding mantra, your content will improve.
All right. Well, it's been great having you. And if anyone wants to get in touch with Margot, you can go to her website. Again, it's www.thatseemsimportant.com, which I love the name of the website. And the content there is phenomenal. We will put Margot's website, LinkedIn profile, and her Twitter address on the show notes, so that you can get in touch with her if you want. And then if you enjoyed this podcast and want to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts, please go to our website, goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and you can check out some of our wonderful past podcasts. Margo, thank you again for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And I look forward to having you back down the road.
Thank you. This was so much fun.